This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tom and Jess on Joy.
Chris, stick around because I want you to be here as well. So I've just also found out I'm the top story on the Sydney Morning Herald as well. So
I think it's just, I think the fact that you're popping up on these websites and you're the banner photo is just a testament to the image that like your family projects and the story that you've been through. You know what I mean? Like it's a really, you know, your what you went through in Corryong, a lot of people aren't really across what that must feel like. But reading those words in The Age and looking at that photo, it's like we can relate to that.
Well, that's our wedding photo from 3 weeks ago when life was perfect.
We talked about this yesterday at a party about is Australia becoming desensitized to fires. Now, we've been listening to them for ages and I actually was saying it's easy for us to sit here in suburbia, safe, enjoying the day, but people, and I was talking about you, Jez, are living through this every day. And if we have a disaster, you know, something like a tsunami happens, we're all, oh my God. But I think we need to be worried. We need action. Our government needs to take action. We're in a disaster.
And yeah. it's a fine line between calling something a disaster and maintaining that idea of, no, this is something we must react to.
Correct.
And, you know, just making sure that we don't have, I guess, bushfire fatigue or warning fatigue, because that's a real risk.
Yeah, so if anyone doesn't know, and I'm getting everyone to redirect to the very well written by Chip Legrand, who happens to be the chief reporter for The Age, wrote a story about my family and our escape, our very harrowing escape from Corryong, as we were there for the Nariel Folk Festival and had done everything that we could about fire plans. Like, I'm not a 100% city slicker. I'm from Perth, West Australia. We've got bushfire all the time. I've also got a property in Warburton, so I'm all about the apps and believing that you do the, when you're given a warning, you do it straight away. So we were the, when there was a warning first put out at the Folk Festival at about 4 o'clock, they said, look, there's going to be some smoke, not to worry. We've been told it's not coming over this way. We're just letting you know that if there's any debris, or they call it like the embers, like we're having some water, just do spot fires and we're going to be fine. If anything does ever go wrong, we've got good fire plans. Now, I had already weeks earlier had called Corryong tourist information, all the different places, and like said, what is the fire plan? Like, what's the best thing? And they said, if there's ever anything, just come into town. The town is a town, you know, like if there's somewhere to go. So at 4 o'clock, when they were saying it was all fine at the festival, I was like, I don't want to wait that long. It was 43 degrees and the winds were crazy. We had our caravan, our tent and everything there. I said, Cleo, all the hotels had already been booked except for one who happened to be non-advertised hotel, and it was a little inside information. When I called, they said, I'll be honest with you, it's a fan room. You're not going to want it. It's a fan room upstairs in 43 degree temperature. And I said, I do want it. Because and we knew that the town was already having a relief centre because everywhere was getting sent to, well, actually we didn't know that at that stage. That's not true. I didn't find that out until later. But we did know that the fire was at Wawa, and that we would be probably the closest town now. And like a good one, a good sized town. Anyway, long story short, I did book that room. I was very quick about it, much to a lot of people going, look, it's not, you're overreacting. You don't have to do anything. It's not coming this way. So we went there. I said, well, worst case, I've got a 5-year-old and my wife is asthmatic. We're just going, I need to be near, I need to be near where there's a hospital if anything happens in that regard too.
Civilization, just knowing that you've got.
I want to know that I've at least checked in. I said, we'll take a bag, we'll check in, we can even come back because there's nothing coming. So we left the caravan open and everything there, including our shell pool and everything, all these buckets. We left all our food, our booze, everything there, But we did know that there was that they did say if there's any ember debris, those that are in tents are probably the only ones that have probably got some, that won't have a great sleep. So we left it open and said anyone can use it. So, because the caravan's going to be safer than a tent. So then we did that. We left it thinking we're going to see it in a couple of hours. So when we got into town, there was nothing really happening. Nobody was really thinking it was a big deal. We bought some food. We knew that the pub was being filled with food for down the road, the Red Cross, but nobody was on. They were kind of looking at us, laughing at we're like city slickers, like, you know, we're going to be putting up with a fan room because we're scared. And they're like, well, Nariel would have been the safest place because it's right next to a creek. You were fine. Like, not the safest place because they believed their place was the safest place. Anyway, I'm trying to make a very long story as short as I can. At about 10 o'clock that night, I got a knock. So we text friends in the festival and said, well, this is our room. If it does get sketchy, let everyone know that not everyone in the festival know, but that we have got this room, room four. Get a knock on the door. Our friend Izzy and her two little kids are there, and she says, we've been evacuated. And I was like, what? So they had a police car with a megaphone evacuate them. So it seemed half were sent to Wodonga or Talangada. And half if they want was Corryong, or depending on when you were out or what you thought was going to be your best option. And so she was now there and we're like, okay, it's going to be fine. The one thing about our hotel, however, is that it has a balcony. And she says, oh, so it was pretty harrowing getting in the car. And I said, what? And she says, well, we didn't see it from the festival, but when you come around the bend, the fire's looks like lava and it's felt like it's coming down like the valley. At this stage, everyone, all the locals included, like, it's not going to hit us. It can't get us through. There's a mountain that's right there. It doesn't come that way. The wind is everything about the apps, the everything. And do you know the thing is the app just said watch and act. It had nothing to do with it just said implement your fire plans, blah, blah, blah. And then we saw that and I was frantically on this thing and people just thought I was being ridiculous because Corryong is going to be fine. And then I did what I could. We watched it coming up over the mountain. I freaked out once I saw that. I rang everywhere I could to find out. Obviously, no one's taking calls, so I went down on the street. I said, I hailed down an SES guy and I said, look, I've just noticed that you've sent out a warning from, like, an actual evacuation notice went from on the Vic apps for Kajua and Clack Clack, and they're 3 kilometres down the road. And they were not being sent to Corryong. They were being sent to Wodonga, Talangada. But people were looking at just Corryong. So I had done look at other ones. So I said, is this safe or should we be getting out? And he says, I'd be getting out. And I said, I've got a 5-year-old and my wife that's asthmatic. He says, I'd be getting out if I could. And then my friend who couldn't, she had been to a festival, been drinking all day with the two kids. She says, and what about staying in town? Is that a good option? He says, we'll do our best. And I said, get in the car, Cleo. So we got in the car and this was about 11:30. And this is the only time Cleo had a meltdown. And she was like, what are we doing? Because now we're driving towards the fire. And I said, Cleo, within 2 minutes, we were in Clack Clack, which has just been evacuated only 40 minutes earlier, saying evacuate now, evacuate now. So I didn't think I had acted too late. And but that app has a lot to answer for, I think, even if lives are lost from this, because we ended up driving and getting there was a makeshift police stop, and they said I said, look, we've just been told by the SES that we should probably take. He says, you're too late. He says, this road, it's not officially closed as yet, but we're about to close. They've got the call happening, but animals are running for their lives and the gates are down and there are spot fires on both sides of the freeway. And I had promised Cleo if we got stopped I would turn around, I would go back, but I was I at least that was actually the first time I felt like somebody was giving me something that I couldn't blame myself for the rest of my life, or at least I had someone turning me back and saying, because that was the hardest part, is here I was being the one that left early and implemented my plans first and was the one that like was a bit too over precautious, yet there's half the festival that didn't get told until 10 o'clock that night, and they got to Wodonga. They got to Talangada, and they were, you know, and we did everything that we were supposed to. We followed that app completely to the T. And do you know, we didn't actually get the app update. It kept saying it will update at 9:10. Well, I started looking at it at 6 p.m. and checked, and then 9:10 happened, and then 11, and then it didn't change until 3:45 in the morning. We'd all like, and that's when it had actually, it didn't change to evacuate. It changed to you are in catastrophic bushfire.
Unfortunately, every communication in that area had been burnt and down. They were saying they were unable to even get in and try and fix it.
Well, that actually hadn't happened at that stage. That was when we lost our power, was at that stage. I think they were trying to minimise panic and thinking that if they did fill the roads of all of Corryong leaving, and also everywhere they had just evacuated, and as they said, they thought the town was not going to get done. And then we're sitting there. I have woke up at 4:15 or 4:30. So I had a 2-hour sleep from 2 to 4:30. I put an alarm on because I wanted to reassess what would happen on the hill. Oh, and the big one. So when we were driving, this is the bit that really does get me. And when I think of it, is my daughter, it was the only time she actually, we realised we couldn't hide it from her. We thought we were doing really good, putting DVDs on and everything. And then when Cleo said, what are we doing? Adia cried really quietly in the background, and we went, what? And she never cries. Everyone in here will vouch for the fact she never cries. And she said, Mum, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And she just kept saying it. And I actually just promised her. I said, Bubba, I've never broken a promise to you, have I? And she said, no. And I said, well, I promise you, you're not going to. And the worst part was, is it was the only time I'd ever promised her something that I didn't know whether it was true or not. So anyway, when we came back, we went to the relief centre, checked that out. They said, go back to the hotel. The hotel had this amazing view of the mountain. At 4:30, it looked like it hadn't changed. So 2 hours, it hadn't changed. And then I was almost about to go back to bed, and this guy came in to get a few hours sleep. He'd been looking after a fire on the other side, the side we couldn't see. And he said, it's crazy. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And he says, and it's coming for town. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then we looked outside, and the mountain was going in our eyes. Like within half an hour, the mountain they said would never burn was burning. And we raced to the relief centre. And it was like, I can only imagine that's the closest thing I'll ever come, or at this stage, I hope it's the closest thing I'll ever come to as a war situation. There was old 95-year-old men sleeping on mats on the floor, which we had to help get up and down. There were people that were screaming. It was so hot. We had no power. No one had phones. Everyone was crying. People were calling if they had a little bit of time, just saying, shoot the horses, because they knew the fires were coming, and they said, we can't let, you know, my husband's raced back in the middle of the fires to shoot all the animals. It was horrific, and it was horrible. It was dogs pooing in there. The rooms were filled with smoke. The masks, and all I kept thinking is this isn't something that happens to Australia.
Not
we're
in
the
Australia.
Lucky, we're this country that doesn't have this. This is not where we are. And there is some beauty that came out of it, that this is a world that, as far as I'm concerned, I saw what it looks like at the end of the world, yet the IGA opened with gas masks essentially on their faces, and the pizza place opened because there was no food coming in, so they were feeding the firefighters and us in the relief centre. And it was amazing how the community pulled together, but we all absolutely, I made two calls, and when the fire came to the door, which it did, and we had nobody, there was nobody to even tell us, don't go, like some people were getting so hot inside, they were going outside, which was letting all the smoke in. But there was nobody. There was nobody there to say, even like the app tells you, go inside and put a wet towel down the door. But when you've got 400 or 500 people in a room that are feeling like they're suffocating as it is as in it the is. Room, yeah. they're like, they're wanting to go out. And the fire came to the door. We didn't hear anything until 11:30 where we were told that we were surrounded, 100% surrounded, and that we were going to be there. If we were going to get through it, the town was infinitely defendable, they said, but a few of their plans hadn't gone their way, but they were trying their best and they were doing their best. And long story short, they said we were going to be there for and that the roads were not going to be accessible for quite some time. And it wasn't until much later that they realised that tomorrow, the next day, was going to be harder and that they had run out of water. We didn't know. We weren't even told. There was no one even there saying, don't take a shower. But there was kids in there running around cooling off in the shower. Mm. And nobody was even in there saying, look, guys, don't flush the toilet. We were all so unaware of what was going on. And then that's why they had to. We were part of what was deemed, I think, the most dangerous. When he said, if you sign up for this convoy at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock that evening, so we had a bit of rain, but it didn't do anything. And at 6 o'clock that evening, they said, if you sign up for the convoy, the names that you put on there, I'm taking, not for any other reason. I don't care what your name is, he said, but it's for the coroner. I need everyone to know that that's what this is. There is no better option, whether you go or you stay. Right. Neither one of them is better than the other, but there's no water, there's no electricity, and it's going to be really, really dangerous. So there was 63 or 68. I thought it was 63. Some are reporting 68. Plus six trucks, fire trucks throughout, spread throughout. And we did the 80, and it was the most tragic drive I think anyone will ever. I'm just glad there wasn't human debris around me, but there was everything else.
So we got to say, it's those beautiful volunteers who have given up their family holidays.
Amazing.
Out there still today fighting on our behalf.
And they are looking wretched. They are looking so tired and so and they are covered in soot, and they are working. Like, we saw so many of them in the end when we finally did get through. At first, we were feeling so alone because we didn't see them. But, of course, we didn't see them. They're out there.
We didn't hear signs. You feel like you're on your own, but then you realise you're not. And it's what you said before, as a community of Australia, we do pull together, and we need to actually come together now.
We need to do something. Yeah. I don't know if it's climate change, if it's whatever, but do you know in Israel they make their 18, 20-year-olds, and they go to do army training, and I've always thought that's a bit brutal. Maybe our biggest war in Australia is firefighting. Why are we not doing, instead of a firefighting, we were sitting ducks. The people who had any experience were out there but were doing 40-hour shifts, coming back for 2 hours to have a little sleep. I was sitting next to a guy who had done 6 days and 40 hours, 2 hours, 40 hours, 2 hours.
That's not possible. They're
out there and they can't have the masks over their face the whole time.
Sweetheart, you are making people cry. And I think it's important to know we do sit here in suburbia and we forget what's happening out there into the rest of the world.
And I want people to know also the lovely thing. So after Adia did say, like, that was the horriblest time for me. But when we went back and there was kids that were scared, or if anyone was scared, Adia would go over and give them a cuddle and say, don't worry, we're not going to die, because my mama kept a promise. My mama never breaks a promise, and she says we're going to be fine. So, you know, like, out of the mouth of babes, sometimes they get the most incredible. We did arts and crafts. We did songs. I made sure that my mum, whenever she did get a message through, if she could, it was make sure the kids don't get traumatised over this as much as possible. But I'm just thank you to everyone out there that is doing what they can, and I pray and hope. It sounds stupid because thoughts and prayer was all I could ask for, yet for so many years I've been like, thoughts and prayers, what a joke. But actually at that time I was a sitting duck that only had thoughts and prayers that I could ask for. So
thoughts and prayers help, but if we all donate, give up your daily coffee, send it off to our Fire Brigade,
good idea.
Country Women's Association, there's plenty of places out there.
Your CFAs.
What they need is money. They need money to fight, because this ain't going anywhere.
Wake up with Tom and Jess, Thursdays on Joy Breakfast. Tune into 94.9 in Melbourne, stream live at joy.org.au or download the Joy app. Find all our podcasts at tomandjessradio.com or subscribe on iTunes or Spotify.
Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.